live from New York, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about a correlation between education and life expectancy. How a study suggests that there's cause for concern over mercury in fish, and how resveratrol helps maintain memory, and how super-ager brains are different. Integrative medicine has a more natural and holistic approach to hypertension, and finally, they're getting around to looking at the new science of healing, energy, something people in this audience have experienced or heard for a long time. It's now going mainstream. Also today, and again, this is all based upon time permitting. We can't get everything in, but what I'd like to get in today is a special commentary from Professor Henry Giroux on the racist killing fields in the United States. And then also today, the private health care as an act of terrorism, Paul Buscheit. Also, Wesley Clark, remember he was on Democracy Now! And other programs? Well, he just did a new interview, and he's talking about he wants internment camps in the United States for radicalized Americans. Radicalized Americans, wouldn't that be an awful lot of people who are progressive because their ideas are radical, like freedom, radical, freedom of choice? Would that mean anyone who wants the freedom to choose a diet, vaccines, a belief system, a religion, radical? We'll play his tape. Also, a House Agricultural Committee says no to GMO labeling. Why is that important? Because all of our efforts at the state level would be negated because the fix is in. They have aligned themselves with Monsanto. Also, the newest study on antidepressants and other psychiatric drugs, quote, do more harm than good. So we'll tell you about that. Also, the latest mass killer out there was on psych drugs. In fact, they've all been on psych drugs. Why is that in no place being discussed? And corporate capitalism is the foundation of police brutality and the prison state, Chris Hedges. Also today, I've been talking about the big ones that are coming. Well, finally, Professor Michio Kaku has a discussion with Shepard Smith on the mega quake that will minimally kill 13,000 people in the Pacific Northwest. It's overdue. Also, here's something that I thought you would appreciate. This is from pageants in the Miss USA contest. They were asked, should math be taught in schools? Also, for those of you who appreciate the wisdom of Roger Waters, amused to death. Now, I'm going to play two clips today. One is a classic clip from the West Wing on literal biblical interpretations, and we know how popular those are with Ann Coulter and the right, and Betty Bowers, America's most strict Christian, explains traditional marriage, all based upon historical scripture, and you'll hear that. So let's begin. As you see, we have a lot to share today. There's a new science, and I appreciate the good people over at Natural News for digging this up. It comes from a group of researchers at the Frank Wrighty Research Center of Bioelectrics at Old Dominion University in Virginia, a very respected institution. And here they worked in a laboratory with actual carcinomas, that, by the way, those are cancers that originate from skin or organ surfaces, using a new electrical application called a pulse electric field, or PEF. It's not new. Chiropractors have been using it for a long time, some, and others in holistic medicine and stress reduction, by having very slight pulses aligned with meridians in the body In fact, recently I have a friend that has AFib, which is epidemic in the United States. It's a irregular heartbeat, and there's a surgery you can do that's relatively safe and very effective, about 99% effectiveness, and which can stop it, but it is invasive. They have to take a cut in the femur artery and take an implement up in, and then they affect a part of the heart, and then you have to be on these anti-blood coagulants for 3 months. Or you can rebalance it using nutrition, and I've helped people rebalance it by using carnitine, hawthorn, and other nutrients that can stabilize them, like magnesium, that can stabilize heartbeat. But now there's also this, and I've seen this work also. Not with this particular unit, but there are units out there that work. It's creating a high-energy pulsed electrical field, and it's managed by surrounding a tissue area with opposite polarity electrodes to induce extreme short burst, meaning nanoseconds of high electrical energy, which is, in the case of the cancer research done at Old Dominion University, it's not the same you'd use if you wanted to help a person with depression or anxiety disorders or sleep disturbances or problems with their kidneys, all of which work. This, of course, is hitting a tumor, which would be within that tissue. So in vitro, by the way, VITRO, that stands for glass, like a Petri dish experiments versus a veto. The experiments demonstrated that it can induce a necrosis, or the premature death of tumor cells. And the necrosis indicates extremely induced destruction, cell death. The cancer cells are simply killed, and then it starts to self-destruct, meaning the tumor begins to kill itself. Now, I think that's really neat that they're using this, finally. So they're realizing that energy and the energy medicine, this is only one little part of energy medicine, can make a difference. I'll give you more on this as it develops. Now, something that those of us, and there are not a lot, but there are, I meet them at conferences, at scientific conferences, that when they ask, how in the world does this diet really work? Because you're feeding a lot of food to people and giving a lot of juice. And I say, well, and I'll give you an example. Recently, I was, one of my scientific studies, and my study was selected to be presented to about 7,000 scientists. And they ask you a gazillion questions, and because you're there to help share the information that you have created with others with the hope that they will be able to do some part of that in their own practices, all with the idea of helping the person. And I said, don't confuse the volume of food you can feed someone with the caloric content of that food, meaning you can give people a lot of food so they feel full, but it's low-calorie food. Like juices are low-calorie. You take a green juice, a 16-ounce glass of green juice, celery, cucumber, green apple, lemon, very little calories in that. But it fills a person up, and it's loaded with nutrition. It can kill bacteria and viruses. It can change the pH of the blood. You start starting your day with some lemon juice, you're able to create a healthier bacterial exchange in the urethra, in the bladder, which means it's more difficult for E. coli to attach, which means you reduce these epidemic. Millions and millions of Americans each year suffer from uterine infections and urethra infections and bladder infections. And then they have to take, of course, antibiotics. Of course, they don't have to. That's what medicine offers. But if you just establish a highly acidic pH in that environment in the morning, and vitamin C will do that, cranberry juice will do it unsweetened, and lemon juice will do it. So by having some cranberry and lemon juice and vitamin C in the morning, even in water, you're able to help keep bacteria from causing inflammation in the intestine, in the bladder, in the urethra. Now, it's all low calorie. This is from the University of Southern California. Quote, diet that mimics fasting appears to slow aging. Benefits demonstrated in mice yeast piloted in humans. Want to lose abdominal fat, get smarter, live longer? New research led by University of Southern California's Walter Longo shows that periodically adopting a diet that mimics the effects of fasting may yield a wide range of health benefits. In a new study, Professor Longo and his colleagues show that cycles of a four-day low-calorie diet that mimics fasting cut visceral belly fat, elevated the number of progenitor and stem cells in several organs of old mice, including the brain, where it boosted neuron regeneration and improved learning and memory. The mouse tests were part of a three-tiered study on periodic fasting effects. And so then it talks about how important it is. Okay. Well, here's the deal. Every single person in any of the studies that I do on lifestyle and behavior modification, they're on this diet every day, meaning a diet that mimics fasting, not that you're going without food, but you're going without high caloric intake of food. And that's the key, lowering overall calories and getting your calories from high nutrient-rich foods. For example, you could have a tablespoon of sugar, which is 3 teaspoons, or you can have an apple, like a red apple. Now, as a nutritionist, you're taught they're both the same. They're not. Take three teaspoons of sugar and watch your blood sugar spike and watch you have this buzz and then watch you have this sense of fatigue and then watch part of your immune system begin to become incapacitated for about 6 hours. On the other hand, have an apple. You're getting the fiber, phytonutrients, polyphenols, quercetin, all good, and you've stabilized your blood sugar. Yet you're getting the same amount of calories. So we have confused the whole subject of the bulk amount of what we get in with the energy of what we should be taking in. The reason we should eat is for healing and for repair and for cleansing our system, our blood, our cells, taking toxins out, and rejuvenation. If you eat the typical American diet, you're diseasing. If you eat a healthy diet, you are preventing disease and rejuvenating. And this study shows that. So have your juices, have your salads, have your smoothies, have your legumes, walnuts, almonds, have all the nuts. You're going to live a longer life. Next up, integrative medicine has some good approaches. And I was just stopped as I was coming to work today, and someone said, I have high blood pressure. I'm on 3 medications. I get dizzy, and I'm impotent, and I have swelling, and yet my doctor says that this is what should be expected, and I want to know what else I can do. And it's one of these ironies of a person that will occasionally listen to the program but doesn't do anything because of the information. I said, well, let's just look at some of the non-pharmacological approaches that will help you with high blood pressure. Blueberries would be one of the top things you could do. In fact, almost all the studies, and you could find this for yourself, you will see that one study in particular with postmenopausal women who had elevated blood pressure, in a randomized study, they received about 22 grams of blueberries, and that's about a cup of blueberries for 8 weeks, and down came the systolic blood pressure and the diastolic blood pressure and improve arterial stiffness. Now, that's not a lot of blueberries. Flax seeds are another thing. Patients with peripheral artery disease who consume 30 grams, that's just about an ounce of mixed flax seeds per day, were examined after 6 months in a double-blind placebo-controlled trial, and their blood pressure came down. Probiotics, also, the live bacteria can be ingested, and blood pressure comes down. Coenzyme Q10, ubiquinol, about 300 to 400 milligrams a day in a group of patients with high blood pressure came down. Dark chocolate can help bring down high blood pressure. Fish oil, for those who consume fish, brings down blood pressure, reduces triglycerides, and reduces the development of plaque on the arteries. And it takes about 3 grams, that's 3,000 milligrams a day, to do that. Extra virgin olive oil is good for bringing down blood pressure. And consuming 4 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil was associated with a substantial reduction in blood pressure during a 6-month period. And women who consume 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil also had the same benefits. Magnesium is just such a superstar. And at 1,200 milligrams, you can bring down blood pressure, and also you can help if you have an irregular heartbeat, and you can help reduce arterial calcification, and you reduce the fatigue in muscles, and you reduce pain in the calves and in the thighs. A high potassium diet that gets some good potassium, like drinking several glasses of coconut water a day, that'll give you about 1,500 milligrams of potassium. Mushrooms, bananas, potatoes, greens, oranges, they're all good. And, of course, if you have kidney disease, you have to go low potassium diet, but for everyone else, it's great. And vitamin C, one of the superstars for lowering blood pressure. In fact, there was a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that taking 500 milligrams of vitamin C a day reduced blood pressure by 5 mm in patients with hypertension. And I believe that 500 milligrams, I wouldn't even recommend it. It's so low. I would start someone at 2,000 milligrams and go up from there. You can do a combination of supplementation, but also papayas, peppers, red peppers, yellow peppers, oranges, cantaloupe, bananas, strawberries, broccoli, all are good. And also whole grains. Now, these are the whole grains, not the processed grains. And so those are things that make a difference in bringing down blood pressure. There was a good study done at the University of Colorado, as well as New York University and University of North Carolina. And they found that going back to finish high school or equivalency could avert as many deaths as could be averted by all smokers in America stopping. Now think of that. A joint study of 3 major universities suggests a strong link between higher education and lower death rates. So there's a lot of reasons for that, and we could each have our own ideas, but clearly one of those ideas is that you are going to, with a good education, especially an education that allows you to feel that you're learning something and you can apply what you learn towards having a quality of life and earning a living, it reduces stress, and it's the stress that kills you. A study suggests a cause of concern over mercury in fish. This is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Researchers, University of Rochester, as well as University of Ulster, found that with 1,265 people in this study, when they checked to see mercury levels, the more fish that a person consumed, the more mercury they had. Now, you don't want high mercury. Why? Mercury is a neurotoxin. It will kill brain cells, nerve cells. It will adversely affect what are called the mitochondria that can cause mega channeling, so the ingredients inside leach out. You become more fatigued. And that's one of the reasons that when people are chelating, the natural process of taking heavy metals like lead and cadmium and mercury and tin and copper out of the body, you see resurgence in their energy. So if you're going to eat fish, the healthiest fish to eat would be sardines. Resveratrol, that's what you get from grapes. I always recommend eating grapes or drinking grape juice or having grape concentrate. But you're getting resveratrol. Thousands of studies on it. This was published in Scientific Reports. A study at Texas A&M University showed that resveratrol improves memory. Now, this was a placebo-controlled four-week trial and in a laboratory, so I'm suggesting 100 to 200 milligrams a day of resveratrol. And the Journal of Neuroscience had a study showing that there is a difference in the brains of normal senior citizens and what are called super-agers of the same age. And it's applied to men and women who retain good episodic memory function well into their advanced years. And subsequent to finding a region of the brain's anterior cingulate cortex that was thicker in superagers in comparison to healthy 50 to 65-year-olds. So it means that these were 80-year-olds who had a brain equivalent to a 50-year-old. And that's because of they found that there was something going on in the brain and they had less inflammation and they had less Alzheimer's. Now, so how does that help us? Well, it helps us in the following way, because it shows us that every time you take in anything that causes inflammation, any kind of inflammation, it also causes inflammation in the brain. So when you smoke or you drink socially, or you take a medication, or you have anything that's fried or browned, toast, bacon, look at all the commercials. Every one of the items in every one of those commercials is causing inflammation. Then you're speeding up the aging in the brain, and those who have a diet that has more healthy foods that are not only not causing inflammation can actually provide antioxidants to stop the inflammation. Then even if they're the same age chronologically, their brains are younger. So just one more example from good science showing that healthy choices earlier in life pay off in dividends later in life. Interesting, because I was with my editor yesterday, who is a professor. He's been my editor for a long time. And after I finish writing a book, I give it to him, and he then goes through, and I ask him one thing, tear it apart, show me what's wrong in it. And he's very good at it. And we had a discussion yesterday, and he said, this new book that you have here, this is such a radical concept. This has never been done before. Now, mind you, this is a highly literate person. He's a professor and in the field. And I said, well, I just decided to change how people look at problems with a completely different mindset. He said, well, you did. And now I'm turning that manuscript in a week. So I'll see what others at the publishing company think. Are we ready for a radicalized book on a different way of thinking of life and ourselves and others? Because right now, it is my opinion that we have many of the problems we have today because not just people in power, but people who give their power to others on their behalf, we assume that there will be some empathy. There is not. As one of my friends said the other day, and this is a very successful person, he said, I don't believe in empathy. I don't believe in we should be living to make it a better world for other people or to help people. The reality is, Gary, we all live for ourselves. We all have our own selfish motives. And I said, well, that's not true. That's true for you, possibly, but don't say that's true for everyone, because I can show you people in this world who do live for other people, who are concerned not for any selfish benefit for themselves, but because they're making a better world. I also agree with you. I think that you're extremely right on for the majority of people, that each day they're going to do what's in their best interest. They're going to seek what is they need. Now, if something should happen as a benefit to other people, so be it. But that's not how they originate their thoughts. So we had this whole discussion about he believing in the Darwinian survival of the fittest, and I'm believing that that only applies to those who have not understood the spiritual. So, interesting concept, and I carry that forward in this new work substantially. So there's, It's never too late to go from being selfishly self-absorbed in yourself to also selflessly caring about others. And that's what we need in the world today. More on that coming up. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I've got a whole lot more to share with you. I decided not to have a guest today, just so we have more time for more commentary. I'd like to welcome you. In an hour from now, or a half hour from now, when we finish our program, I'll be staying on our local sister station, WBAI, to help them with an hour of fundraising. But I also wanted to mention, because this is the largest audience for the station, and I'm going to be sharing some Arbitrons. I just thought there's a difference between a show being popular and in the sense that it's well known, or people being well known, versus what kind of audience they actually have. I've got the latest numbers, not just for this radio station, but for national television programs where people are well known. You look at their audience, it's tiny. So I'll give you that coming on an upcoming show. In any case, we're raising some funds for the people of WBAI. And other premiums I'll offer in the next hour, but here's what I'm going to offer today, because I want this audience to also be aware of it and be able to take advantage of it, because all the funds, every penny, goes to WBAI. I donate my time. I contribute my time. And it's only for this week. This is it. Wednesday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. A dinner at 6, a movie of your choice, because there are all kinds of wonderful art films at the Lincoln Center and Lincoln Plaza, and we'll go there. And then back for dessert uptown that you can take home with you. It's a lot of time spent. It's 5-6 hours. And it's only $100. And that pays for the meal and the movie and the station. My hope is to raise about $5,000 for the station. Last week I raised about $11,000 in one show for the station. And this time we're doing this because it's fun. And it's something you can do immediately. Call this number. Call 646-926-5422. That's 646-926-5422 if you'd like to join me. Either, you got choice, Wednesday, Friday, or Saturday evening for dinner and a movie. But, listen carefully, you will not be allowed to ask me health questions. It's purely to socialize, because some people have come thinking, oh, now I got you for 5 hours and I can ask you a gazillion questions. That's not what this is about. It's to socialize and enjoy an evening together with a lot of very progressive-minded people. 646-926-5422. But if that number is busy, I'm going to give you another number that you can call, because it may be busy. And again, the pledge is for $100. And all of it goes to WBAI as we're trying to raise money for the station. And I'll be on for a whole hour after this program raising money for the station. And I'll give you that number here in a moment. Let me just get it here from my engineer. While we're getting that number, I want to share a couple more things with you. The House Agriculture Committee says no to GMO labeling. Now, this is from the Organic Consumer Association, quote, with no debate and only a voice vote, the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Agriculture just yesterday passed out Committee H.R. 1599, that's H.R. 1598, a bill to preempt states' rights to label GMOs. Within hours, it was announced the bill will go straight to the House floor, and with no vote in the Energy and Commerce Committee. So if we don't stop this vote in the House immediately, then it means that no matter what we do at the state level, the federal government's law will say, no, it doesn't matter. We're not going to label any GMOs at all. And if you look at the people who sponsor this bill, well, then you see why they sponsored the bill. These are all people who receive campaign contributions from Big Agra. So it's H.R. 1599. Let your legislator in the House know no to this bill. By the way, that other number, in case our main number is busy, is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. This I found interesting. This was from Common Dreams, Paul Buchheit. It's called Private Healthcare as an Act of Terrorism. Quote, the FBI defines terrorism as acts dangerous to human life intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population. Well, much of the behavior of our current healthcare system meets that definition. The facts show intention on the part of corporations to intimidate the population by using market strategies to charge whatever they like for their medical products and services, and an effort to coerce the public into accepting the current system as the only option. Medical billing fraud is estimated at 10% of all healthcare, or about $270 billion, while patent monopolies raise the price of prescription drugs by another $270 billion a year. Combined, this represents an astonishing annual cost of over $4,000 to an average American household. As the Atlantic article monthly stated, quote, the people most likely to bilk the system are doctors and medical providers, not welfare queens. In a recent analysis of 50 hospitals, 49% for-profit, with the highest charge-to-cost ratio, the average markup was 1,000%, which means that a procedure costing $100 is marked up to $1,000. Some of the markups test the limits of sanity. An 80-cent needle, 80 pennies, cost $143. That's a 17,000% markup. A 25-cent IUD, 25 cent, a quarter, they charge $1,000. A blood test that costs $10 in one hospital, $10,000 in another hospital. A John Hopkins professor explained, quote, they are marking up the prices because no one is telling them they can't. So this involves cheating. Pharmaceutical companies have successfully lobbied Congress to keep Medicare from bargaining for lower drug prices. Americans are further cheated when corporations pay off generic drug manufacturers to delay entry of their products into the market, thereby forcing consumers to pay the highest prices for medicines. We're cheated again by certificate of need laws, which force many patients to accept established money-making procedures while denying access to modern technologies such as virtual colostomies. And cheated again when the doctors we trust accept payoffs from pharmaceutical companies to promote most expensive products. And like the hospitals, corporations are fleecing the public with unfathomable markups. After Gilead Sciences was criticized for charging $1,000 for a single hepatitis pill that cost $10 for the same identical pill in Egypt, the company responded by introducing a new pill for $1,350 per pill. So, uninsurance can be deadly. Low-income minorities are least likely to have coverage, and the resulting financial stress, as documented by over 200 separate studies, leads to sickness and early death. Over 40% of uninsured adults of color would be eligible for Medicaid if the program were adopted by all states. But it's not just the uninsured who feel the terror of unattainable health care. About half of privately insured Americans report experiencing financial hardship as a result of health care cost, and nearly a half of sick Americans skip doctor visits or medication purchases because of excessive cost. Even though the Obamacare helps with some of the uninsured by nearly a third, the average deductible has more than doubled for another $1,200 per year. In large part due to corporate austerity measures, many Americans cannot afford this. A recent Bankrate poll found that almost two-thirds of Americans didn't have savings available to cover a $1,000 emergency room visit. However, we do have the best medical care in the world for the wealthy. Wealth promotes wealth and health. Super wealthy guys, well, they can buy an emergency room for the mansion or yacht or private plane equipped with scanners, ultrasound, x-ray machines, and blood analyzers. Or if a hospital stay is needed, you can find a $2,400 suite with a butler in the hospital's penthouse. Not all of the concierge medicine is so extravagant. You know, you can pay $25,000 a year as a premium to be a member in case you ever get sick. Well, that's for the very rich, not for everyone else. And speaking about everyone else, I'm very concerned that we as a nation have not accepted how many people in America support racism by not challenging the police system we have and the criminal justice system that is so flawed. And we should. The United States has become a country that is proud of what it should be ashamed of. How else to explain the popularity of a Donald Trump among the Republican Party's right-wing base? As a society, we, exceptions to individuals, of course, but we celebrate violence in the name of security and violate every precept of human justice through an appeal to fear. This speaks clearly to a form of political repression in a toxic value system. Markets and power are immune to justice and despise it. All that matters is control, financial control, political control, serve soulless markets and the Darwinian culture of cruelty. How many more young people are going to be killed by walking in the street, failing to signal a lane shift, looking a police officer in the eye, or playing with a toy gun? How many more names of black men and women and young people will join the list of those whose deaths have sparked widespread protest? Widespread among the black, not among the white, never among the affluent, or the professional class. Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Eric Gardner, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Renisha McBride, Alania Jones, Sakia Gunn, among just a handful. Yes, Sandra Bland, the latest. Is it any wonder that one funeral director in Chicago stated, young people in the city do not expect to live late into their adult life? Moreover, police violence in the United States is not only a direct manifestation of state violence, but also serves as a gateway to prison, especially for people of color and the poor. Yet, the mainstream media is more infatuated with game shows and financial brutishness and celebrities and the idiocy of Donald Trump than they are concerned about the endless violence waged against poor children of color in the United States. This violence speaks clearly to a society that no longer wants to invest in its youth. And if one measure of a democratic society is how it treats young people, the United States fails miserably. The form that the war on terror has taken at home is a war on poor people of color, especially black people. Racism and police militarization have created a kind of terrorism, one in which extreme violence is being used against black people for the most trivial of infractions. The killing of black youth by the police, a norm that stretches way back in an unbroken line of terror to slavery, takes the form of both routine affair and spectacle. Nowadays, acts of domestic terrorism perpetrated by police take place increasingly in full view of the U.S. public, who more and more are witnessing such lawlessness after it is recorded and uploaded onto the Internet by bystanders. New technologies now enable individuals to record such violence in real time and make it a matter of public record. And while this public display of the deployment of domestic terrorism is undeniably crucial in that it makes a visible the depravity of state violence, these images are sometimes co-opted by the mass media, commodified, disseminated in ways that they can exploit and even attempt to erase. Black lives, as William C. Anderson argues, don't count. In the current environment, racial violence is so commonplace that when it is perpetrated by the police against innocent people, justice is not measured by holding those who commit the violence accountable. The official measure of justice is simply that the presence of violence be noted by authorities and the mainstream media. Few of the most powerful people seem distraught by the ongoing shootings, beatings, and killings of African Americans, a society in which a black man is killed every 28 hours by the U.S. police or security guards. In a country in which militarism is viewed as an ideal and the police and soldiers are treated like heroes, violence becomes the primary modality for solving all of our problems. One consequence is that state violence is either ignored, rendered trivial, or shamelessly legitimized in the name of the law and security or self-defense. State violence fueled by the merging of war on terror, the militarization of all aspects of society, and a deep-seated, ruthless, non-apologetic racism is now ubiquitous and should be labeled as a form of domestic terrorism. Terrorism, torture, and state violence no longer simply are part of our history. They have become the nervous system of an increasingly authoritarian state. Eric Gardner told the police as he was being choked to death that he could not breathe. His words also applied to democracy itself, which is lacking the civic oxygen that gives it life. The United States is a place where democracy cannot breathe. Now, this is from something a little different to change the energy. These are contestants in the Miss USA pageant asked the question, should math be taught in schools?
Math? No. I do not believe in math, and I don't think we should encourage it.
Oh, okay, this is a really hard one. There are really two sides to this story. On the one hand, you have math, and then on the other hand, you have... This is like non-math?
All seven-year-olds should have the right to decide for themselves if math is scientific fact. Math is a theory, and it's not at all what the Bible tells us.
We live in America, not Russia.
Just a little bit. Adding, not, times.
I think that people should try to be as knowledged as they can. I think they need to get learned so that, you know, they can make a choice about all of the world things.
Children have the right to learn anything they want to learn. Alchemy, Scientology, gymnastics.
You really don't know what the square root of 16 is. No one does.
Aliens. You know, how to just make basic mixed drinks.
Yes, it's math. I'm sorry, is this a joke?
Creationism, whatever those Heaven's Gate people believed. Oh, and math.
There are numbers everywhere. You know, on phones, on houses, on microwaves.
Numbers are great, but they should also learn colors, smells, vibrations.
Math should just be left out of the equation. Not the equation like in a math sense, just like, you know, equation, right? So, because I don't like believe in math.
Not to women.
I guess if other people want to learn math, they should be able to. But then they'll be the type of people who know math.
Okay, well, just imagine having one of them as President of the United States. Now let's hear what a fictional President of the United States, Martin Sheen, had to say about literal biblical interpretation.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot. I wish I could spend more than a few minutes with you, but the polls don't close in the East for another hour, and there are plenty of election results still left to falsify. You know, with so many people participating in the political and social debate through call-in shows, it's a good idea to be reminded every once in a while. It's a good idea to be reminded of the awesome impact. I'm sorry. You're Dr. Jenna Jacobs, right?
Yes, sir.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
The awesome impact of the airwaves and how that translates into the furthering of our national discussions, but obviously also how it can Forgive me, Dr. Jacobs. Are you an M.D.?
A Ph.D.
A Ph.D.?
Yes, sir.
In psychology?
No, sir.
Theology?
No.
Social work?
I have a Ph.D. in English literature.
I'm asking because on your show, people call in for advice, and you go by the name Dr. Jacobs on your show, and I didn't know if maybe your listeners were confused by that and assumed you had advanced training in psychology, theology, or healthcare.
I don't believe they are confused, no, sir.
Good. I like your show. I like how you call homosexuality an abomination.
I don't say homosexuality is an abomination, Mr. President. The Bible does.
Yes, it does. Leviticus
18:22.
Chapter and verse. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions while I had you here. I'm interested in selling my youngest daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. She's a Georgetown sophomore, speaks fluent Italian, always cleared the table when it was her turn. What would a good price for her be? While thinking about that, can I ask another? My chief of staff, Leo McGarry, insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly says he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself, or is it okay to call the police? Here's one that's really important, because we've got a lot of sports fans in this town. Touching the skin of a dead pig makes one unclean. Leviticus 11:7. If they promise to wear gloves, can the Washington Redskins still play football? Can Notre Dame? Can West Point? Does the whole town really have to be together to stone my brother John for planting different crops side by side? Can I burn my mother in a small family gathering for wearing garments made from two different threads? Think about those questions, would you? One last thing. While you may be mistaking this for your monthly meeting of the ignorant, tight-ass club, in this building, when the president stands, nobody sits.
Now remember, literal interpretations. And right now we have people bragging about literal interpretations. You can look at any book and say it's a metaphor. You can selectively take what you want for inspiration, guidance. But when you say you're a literalist, and there are tens of millions of people are, shouldn't you actually read what you're going to be suggesting is the literal truth? Let's now go to finish off our program with Shepard Smith and Professor Michio Kaku talking about the megaquake that is coming.
Read a stunning article by Catherine Schulz in the New Yorker this week. And frankly, if I lived right now in the Pacific Northwest, I'd be considering moving. Seriously. The gist of it is this. The federal government estimates 13,000 Americans will die in a major earthquake and tsunami in the Pacific Northwest. It's not a question of whether, but when. This earthquake is coming, and it's overdue. Consider that the magnitude 9.0 earthquake in Japan, just a few years ago, remember that, killed more than 15,000 people in the north of Japan and injured thousands of others. Seismologists say that the quake that will strike on our Pacific Northwest coastline should be even stronger, at up to a 9.2. They call such a quake a margin rupture quake, and it's every bit as bad as it sounds. Here's the reason for it. Our entire continent sits on the North American tectonic shelf, right? Plate, I should say. Off the coast of the Pacific Northwest, from the top of Washington State all the way down to Northern California. This is it. And another plate called the Juan de Fuca is trying to slide up under North America, but it's stuck. We have an illustration over here in the Big Wall. Let me show you what this is. This is our continent here. This is the Cascadia Mountains. This is the Cascadia, what do they call it? The Cascadia what?
Bridge.
The Cascadia Bridge. I was actually asking him, but thank you. The North American plate here and the Juan de Fuca plate here. This one's sliding up under, and eventually this is going to go down, send a huge wall of water up. That wall will go all the way over to Japan, and the other will come onto our shore within 15 minutes. And when it slips, it will unleash not only a colossal earthquake, but also that tsunami, 700 miles long and in some places up to a 100-foot high wall of water and whatever it's pushing, like houses and dump trucks and schools. Thousands and thousands will not escape. The New Yorker quotes a FEMA official who says, and I quote, "Our operating assumption is that everything west of Interstate 5 will be toast." Everything west of Interstate 5 is gone. That's Seattle, Tacoma, Portland and Olympia, Salem and Eugene, wiped out, altogether about 7 million people. That's not including tourists. So think of summertime. The New Yorker reports that FEMA calculations indicate the disaster will damage or destroy about 1 million buildings including 3,000 schools and one-third of all fire stations. And perhaps the worst part of all of this, these sorts of earthquakes happen at regular intervals in exactly this part of the world, have forever. On average, according to seismologists, about every 240 years. So when was the last one of these massive 9.2 or so earthquakes? Well, the last one was more than 300 years ago, the year 1700. It struck in the Pacific Northwest and sent a 600-foot wave of water all the way to Japan. So right now, on average, the Pacific Northwest is decades overdue for the really, really big one. Michio Kaku is a physicist and professor at City College of New York. This article is stunning. Is it overstated in any way?
No, the Cascadia Fault is an earthquake waiting to happen. We know it's going to happen with an energy 30 times the maximum energy of the San Andreas Fault. So Hollywood has us brainwashed into thinking the big one is going to be in California. No, the Cascadia Fault would pack energy 30 times the energy that the San Andreas Fault can muster.
The article speaks of a liquefaction of the earth, that part of the earth will turn to liquid.
That's right. We're talking about major energy surges inside the ground that'll cause it to liquefy. We've seen that in Japan. We saw that at Fukushima. And it's almost like quicksand. One day you're walking on solid ground. The next you're falling right into a quicksand.
This earthquake would last 4 minutes or more, the rattling and the shaking. And then within 15 minutes, they estimate this wall of water in the entire inundation zone, you could have water up to 100 feet high.
That's right. And in the inundation zone, we have 70,000 people that have almost no clue as to what could happen. You know, in Japan, you have to live with earthquakes every day. Children go through tests and drills. People are conscious of this. But in the Pacific Northwest, it barely rates on the radar screen.
There's something that happens before the shaking that we can sense, sensors can pick up. That's an early warning system that they have all over Japan, especially in the north and in the Tokyo area. They've been trying to get it pushed through, look for money for it in the Seattle-Tacoma area, nothing.
That's right. Before the earthquake actually hits, there's a compression wave that is detected by animals, for example. Animals start to act very strange, and we've seen that happen before earthquakes. And then a minute, 2 minutes later, boom, you head for the hills because there's nothing left to do except to go to high ground.
You mentioned what this sort of event has caused in history.
That's right. In the year 1700, there was a massive earthquake and tsunami which surged over Japan. And then running the videotape backwards, you can actually see that in 1700, it originated with a Cascadia Fault. And then we physicists can calculate the energy, the magnitude, the dynamics, once we got these two events linked together. And that was only done in the last decade or so.
And you mentioned Mount Everest.
That's right. Mount Everest is also created by the collision of two faults, just like what we have here. The one fault going under, the other fault going over, and that created the Himalayan mountains. That created Mount Everest. That's the power packed by the subduction zone earthquake.
Okay. Averages of when things are going to happen are really not very reliable. I think they use by example, the difference between 4 and 6 is 2. I forget exactly how they did it. We can't be sure exactly when this is going to happen, but we're positive it's going to happen. If you lived in the Pacific Northwest, you had little kids, would you live there?
I'd think twice. I would have to, like, drill them, just like what they do in Japan, be part of their life in terms of having an emergency kit, where to go in case of an emergency, what to do, what frequencies to go to, and so on and so forth. And, by the way, we know that this is going to happen because by simply drilling into the seafloor, we can see evidence of ancient tsunamis going back 10,000 years. And we know
that... There have been how many over that period?
41. Which means that the time between the cycles is about 240 years.
Wow.
And it's been 315 years since the last big one. Now, of course, this is not rigorous, it's not absolute. But according to this figure, we could be overdue for another big one.
Yeah, by many decades.
And that's just to give you an idea of some of the concerns that those of us who are looking at the environment and where we should be conscious, right? Just like the drought. 7 years ago, I started telling you, you're going to run out of water. Well, now you run out of water. Now I'm saying, if you live in the Pacific Northwest or California, be aware, it's going to happen. We just don't know when. Finally today, we are collecting photographs. Any photographs or videos you have from all the time that I've been on the radio, any kind of running, exercising, dance parties, lectures, any of the things where I have interrelated with the audience. If you have a picture of it, we want to put together a whole composite and show up on the internet. Please send it. You'll get it back. Send it to Gary Knoll, 2421 Broadway, New York, New York, 10024. That's Gary Knoll, 2421 Broadway, New York, New York, 10024. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program.